Today on the BizNews Sports Show, we're joined by Springbok legend, 1995 World Cup winner, Joel Stransky. Rory, what more can you tell us about Joel?
Well, good morning, everybody, and especially you, Joel. Thank you so much for your time, as ever. What I can tell you, Patrick, and all of the BizNews tribe, is that Joel is one of those guys who has remained humble and kept his feet on the ground. And whenever I've asked him, you know, it might sound like a small thing to give 20 minutes of your time to come on the BizNews Sports Show and talk to the BizNews tribe. But for someone who's busy and also busy training for the Absa Cape Epic, and we'll talk a little bit about that in a minute or two, it's not such a small thing. And quite outside of BizNews, for the interest of everybody in the tribe, Joel operates a charity called Lumo Hawk, which raises funds to provide eyeglasses and contact lenses and basically enable kids from families that don't have the means to be able to see properly so that they can go to school. And I support his and he supports my charity. And every single time I've asked Joel Stransky, hey, Joel, will you come and ride for the African Icons? It's never been, ach, no, maybe. It's always absolutely when, you know, how can I help and when can I help? So I didn't want to say that about Joel. But of course, everybody knows him as the guy that kicked that drop goal. You know, I mean, it's such an iconic, I think there's two things that are iconic about 1995, apart from the fact that we won it. That's the obvious one, but that's the grand narrative. But the two side narratives are the fact that Madiba walked onto the field wearing that number six jersey, wearing a Springbok cap, and brought about 98% of the Afrikaner and white South African nation on side, or at least to a point where we'll say we'll give this man a chance. And the other thing is, of course, that drop goal that wins it for us in extra time. And Joel, maybe let's just get your version of events there, because I've heard Joost van der Westhuizen, and or you say actually that Francois Pienaar had called a move that you cancelled. Can you just walk us through that, please? And welcome on our show.
Well, firstly, morning all. And Patrick Kissy, I think to be a legend, you have to be dead. So we'll stop there. It's just, I'm very humbled by your introduction, Rory. Thank you. It's very kind of you. And obviously, I mean, it's lovely that our charities work hand in hand and that we can help each other, obviously. Yes, just going back to 1995, you know, we often look at it as a game of rugby that, you know, played a role in changing a nation. But really, we just did our thing on the field, to be quite frank. We were just a bunch of young rugby players who wanted to win a World Cup. And Madiba did unbelievable things in and around it on the periphery to unite a nation. It was a special time. It was a great time for all South Africans, and a great time at a time of uncertainty to come together. And I think maybe to your point, you know, even in the game, it was 12 all, so a period of uncertainty in the game. And Francois did. He called a back row move to play to the right to go to the blind side. I think the All Blacks had obviously studied us because we scored against Australia doing that move. And I could see how they loaded the blind side. They knew what was coming. I mean, it was a good move because we had Strali, who was, you know, big, strong, powerful, super quick. Joost, Andre Joubert, I think Brendan Fenter was on at that point, out on the outside. It was you know, move set up for us to create havoc, but they'd set up to defend it well. So I shouted to Joost, you know, so I could see there was a gap to kick into. Kitch Christie, in his unbelievable wisdom, had planted the seed of the drop goal. And I knew there was a, you know, big space to step into and make the drop goal. But I always laughed at Joost because he always said to me afterwards, he said, "You never thanked me for my great pass." I said, "It was the only great pass you ever made." I said, "The shortest hamstrings in the world, fetching the ball all over the place." But, you know, credit to him. He trusted me and sent the ball back and over Grant. And it was, you know, probably the sign of a great team that there was, you know, trust across the board. And when something was on, we played what we saw in front of us.
You know, the Americans in football call it calling an audible. And that's essentially what you did, Joel. But I just want to stand still, since we both mentioned Joost, that isn't it so sad, and we've spoken about charities, but isn't it so sad that two people on that field, actually three, because there's Andre Fenter. Did he also die of, or he has motor neuron disease, but certainly Jonah and you passed from it. Okay.
Yeah, but not Andre Fenter. So he, and he's still alive. He's so healthy and strong. He's in a wheelchair, but he has a virus that attacked the bottom of his spinal cord.
Okay.
It's inversitis, I think it's called, inverolitis, something like that. But he wasn't in that squad. You know, it was Ruben Kruger who died of a brain.
Of course it was. Yeah, of course it was. Yeah. Yeah, he was at 7. And I still think, and plenty of people do, that he actually scored that try. You know, the one that was disallowed by Terry Bevan. Yeah, go ahead.
No, it was Ed Morrison the ref. So actually, Ed Morrison was honored last week by World Rugby and the RFU for his contribution to rugby. And the referees got together and asked me to do a little video post saying congratulations to him. So I did this little video post, and I wanted to make it like quite special. So I thought about it long and hard, and actually ultimately when I put my words together and I did the video post, I can't remember the exact words I used, but I said the following, and I said, it is so cool that he's being honored because he played a major role in the history of our country and in the history of the World Cup and us coming together. He was there in the middle, you know, and he will always be remembered for that. And he was a great referee and his contribution to rugby. And I got to know him a little bit after the World Cup. What a wonderful man. And I said all these things lovely. And then I said to him, and thank you for not awarding the try.
It
was a try, but thank you for not awarding the try. Because if you had awarded the try, I'd probably never have kicked the drop goal and I'd never be sitting here doing this, you know, this,
that's beautiful,
this little priesthood camera. And he sent me such a lovely thank you. So
well done, man. What a wonderful man, yeah. All right, so since we're talking about Ed Morrison and his English, and Derek Bevan, who I mentioned, is Welsh. Let's just review, Joel, if you would, this past weekend, because we had three really, they were massive matches, because even Wales, Italy, probably got to decide who's not going to finish last. And I would certainly like to ask the question, you know, Quo Vadis, Wales, where does Welsh rugby go after 14 straight defeats and not a single win in a calendar year? What's going to happen with Warren Gatland and who's going to replace him? You know, please give us your thoughts on that one first, Joel.
Well, obviously he's gone now, you know, so that's the first thing I read this morning. I was actually just looking at the news this morning. There's a bit of talk about Franco Smith actually becoming the new coach. One of the candidates, from your point of view, And the other guy I mentioned is Sky Easterby, who's the acting coach for Ireland at the moment, and obviously a key part of Farrell's Irish team. Those are the two names that have popped up. So I'm not sure. I think right now it's probably a poison chalice, to be quite honest. And I say that because Wales were in our country 18 months or 2 years ago, and SA Rugby, Mark Alexander asked me if I wouldn't mind going with on a little trip with the Welsh president and the Welsh CEO of the professional board. And we went up and entertained them, and SA Rugby took them up to a lovely little camp here in the bush, not far from Salt Rock, a couple of hours up north, you know, near Shishlui, a beautiful part of the world. The thing that struck me most, and I'm not going to mention names or anything, but they were two wonderful old gentlemen, super lovely guys, one of each former player, but they both were dinosaurs of a legacy of the past. And as long as you are not moving forward off the field, you can never move forward on the field. That's just the reality of this game. You know, if you think of SA Rugby, whether you like Mark Alexander, the president, or Yuri Roo, the former CEO, Renewables are the present CEO, whether you like them or not, it's beside the point. SA Rugby in the last 7-8 years, aside from the Yuri Roo drama, you know, from his time at Stellenbosch, there's been no drama. There's no controversy. The quota system has become almost a term from the past. We don't use that term anymore. SA Rugby is fully representative in every way. The team have won 2 World Cups. The ladies team are progressing. The sevens team have come good in the last little while. It's just on track. You know, the management at that level is outstanding, and it manifests itself on the field through the coaching team. And yes, we have loads of talent, but the talent comes when there's a happy environment, you know, when the game's in good shape, when the decisions that are made about the game at all levels are good. And that's where we are. Wales are exactly at the other side of the spectrum. They've got these old dinosaurs fighting for how it was done in the past. their football team have done well, so they lose talent. A lot of the talent of sportsmen and women go play football, rather. Basketball is growing. The tall guys play basketball because rugby's getting smashed every week. It's just a complete downward spiral. And I don't know how they turn that route. You know, it's as a result of them losing, there's not enough money in the game to keep their players local. It's so hard. It's like a downward spiral. So I fear the worst for Wales, Rory. I think they might become the wooden spoonists for the next few years because Italy are exactly the opposite. Italy are trying desperately to win games.
For sure, and mainly thanks to the pipeline that Franco Smith put in place there, you know, a number of years ago when he was director of rugby. But I'd like to ask you two more questions on Wales, Joel, and they are these. One of the criticisms directed at Warren Gatland was that he too was a bit like a dinosaur caught in the past. In other words, he hadn't evolved his coaching methods and his on-field strategy. So I'd like your comment on that. And the other thing is it also, or is it purely a matter of a dearth of talent in those four Welsh clubs?
I think it's both. I mean, if you look at how poor the Welsh teams were in last year's URC, I'd say it's a dearth of talent. This year they've been a little bit better. They've certainly been a little bit more competitive, but still not great and not up there, you know, setting the standard. So I would think there is an issue of talent coming through in the ranks, and I think they probably need to go back to grassroots and start, you know, finding a way to attract better players and breed them from a younger age and you know, instill those talents. But there's no doubt a coach also has a lifespan. And a different voice is required at times, and you have to move forward and you have to be progressive. And I don't think, with all respect to Warren Gatland, he's a lovely guy. I don't think that team has shown any innovative thinking, whether you're talented or not, to try and, you know, come up with something new to win those big games.
Must concur with that. And, you know, we must never forget how good Gatland was for Wales. I think they won three Grand Slams under him, and they certainly, you know, he coached two British and Irish Lions tours. So, you know, his legacy stands there for history to recall. And there's gates named after him at the Principality Stadium. But of late, I'm afraid, and you know, Joel, I remember when we won the World Cup in Japan in 2019 and Russie was making noises about, you know, we've got to evolve, we can't stand still. And I'm thinking, why? We've got the game plan that clearly is working, the way we dominated that World Cup. And remember how tough it was to beat Wales. That was probably the toughest game of that campaign. But yet he's proved that bringing in Coney Brown and doing stuff, putting the flankers into the wide channels is exactly what we needed. And if we didn't do that, maybe we would also not be where we are now.
Yeah, 100%.
To your foot, yeah.
I have this mate of mine. He passed away sadly a couple of years ago from cancer. But I used to use him as a coach in business, actually, for all my sales teams and sometimes for motivation. And he had this little saying: "If it ain't broke, fix it." And really, what he was saying is, you can't stand still because the rest of the mob are broken and they're trying to
come going forward. Yeah.
You have to always be moving forward. You have to always be innovative. You have to always be trying to think out the box a little. And I think that's where Russie has been absolutely brilliant. You know, whether he is a bit of a troubled genius and we hear stories, but what he has done, he has built an unbelievable culture in that squad. He's got players who would die for their I want to say their brothers, because I think they see their teammates. They love their teammates. So they would die for their brothers, their family, and for their country. Plus, they play a style that suits them, and they keep on adding to what they do just to get better and better and harder to beat. It's a recipe that works unbelievably well, particularly at Test rugby, where it is about size and strength and managing key moments, which they do unbelievably well.
Well, yeah. Thanks, Joel. So if we move to the game that actually was on the Sunday of this past weekend, I've just got in my notes, I've got it next, and that was Scotland-Ireland, you know, and as somebody who has become very familiar with Scotland and a diehard supporter of them, I was very disappointed. I thought they were poor. Yeah. Look, the injuries pre-game, mainly Sione Tuipulotu, I mean, you need two oaks to replace him because you're so good on defense and attack. But that notwithstanding, they put a decent side on the field. And then you had this awful head clash between Darcy Graham and Finn Russell, which didn't help. But still, to lose at Murrayfield, you know, to take 32 points against you was, I thought, massively disappointing. I thought that the halfback was slow to the ball. Jonathan Gibson Park was quick. You know, he's arguably the best nine after DuPont. And I failed to, I don't know, was it an off day for Scotland, Joel? Ireland were just so clinical, and they remind me of the box that they trust so fully in their game plan. They just stick at it, and eventually the W comes, you know, the victory. And for the record, and we digress a little, but Franco Smith has instilled that same thing with Glasgow Warriors. They believe that all whole squad believes in the game plan. If you look at that final versus the Bulls, they stick at it and eventually they come good, even though they were behind by the halftime whistle. So I'm interested in your thoughts on that Scotland-Ireland game. You know, Ireland was superb.
Ireland were superb, and they showed those signs against England the week before as well. So yeah. I think you're 100% right about Ireland, so this is what I think. I think Ireland are still evolving a little, new fluff. They're just getting smooth in the way they play that layered and sophisticated game plan, and they're getting better and better and better. They keep on going though. When they make mistakes, when it doesn't quite work out, when they get smashed back or they lose the ball, whatever, they just keep on coming at you. And you know, I said it a moment or so ago, rugby, you can't dominate 80 minutes in a test match. No team, even if it's the Springboks playing against Portugal, you can't dominate for 80 minutes. What you have to do is dominate the key moments. And Ireland are really good at that. They wear you down. They keep on coming. When you knock them back, they come again. Where's the ball going? It's so sophisticated and complex. You just don't know where it's going. And eventually, all of a sudden, they have a five-minute pack, score two tries, and they take the game away from you. And they did that against England, and they did that against Scotland. So that's what worries me about Ireland is, imagine in 3 months' time where they settle a little and Polder, I guess, whatever his name is, the young fluff, and becomes more fluent in their rhythm and the way that they. Gibson Park is their catalyst. He's an unbelievable player. Yeah. And then you've got these tiered layers of attack, and they become smoother at that. They will wipe teams out. They will all of a sudden start scoring some big scores. On the weekend, I didn't think Ireland were great. I thought they had a few moments where they got going and they scored and they took the game away. But a good side would have conceded and come back, and Scotland didn't have it to come back. And for a couple of reasons, where I think the reality about Scotland is they're a good side across the board. They're not a great side anywhere. They don't have any part of their game, which is really great. That when the chips are down, they can go to that and dominate in that way. The scrum's okay. The line-out's okay. They carry the ball with great vigor and great enthusiasm. But aside from Tupolotu, no massive carrier gets them over the game line. They work it wide, and they've got wingers who score tries and bit of strength out wide. It was a great finish by Dwayne Fundamova, by the way, the one try.
Yeah, it was.
Sensational finish. But to do, you know, the game is about physicality. I said it about the Springboks, big, strong, powerful. You have to have the ability to dominate those moments when it really counts. And I don't think Scotland have that right now.
Yeah. And you know, Ireland are just so well-rounded. I mean, everybody talks up the Scottish back row of Rory Dodge, Matt Ferguson, and Jack Dempsey, who have done so well for Glasgow Warriors. They come into Scotland and they're good, but you know, they're up against Van der Fleer and Caelan Doris. And if you play Ty Byrne on the other side of the scrum, not at lock, that's a proper back row, you know. So yeah, I agree. And they've got James Lowe, who's better than Duan in the 11 shirt, and will probably start there for the British and Irish Lions. They've just got ballers in that back row. They've got three centers that they can chuck and change. So the last thing I'll ask you on that, Joel, because you mentioned young Prendergast, is he, because before him, it looked as if it was going to be a coin flip between Frawley and Crowley. So where does your fly half brain tell you Ireland should stick?
I think at the moment Prendergast he's got pole position. He's the guy who's wearing the shirt. And he's also a real youngster, you know. So he has this exuberance of youth. He hasn't quite discovered the fear of failure, which all us old oaks learn about. and he's playing well, you know. And I think, and I, so this is, I'm loath to say it, but I think in the last, I don't know, 15 or 16 years, we've always looked at Ireland, and they've had these great tens, you know, Johnny Sexton, and before, and there were tens. But every time we got to
Agara,
it felt like they peaked in the 2 years between the World Cups and got to the World Cup, and those flyoffs went through their depths and didn't quite. They weren't just in the prime in form when they got to World Cups. I think if they want to win a World Cup or get to a semi-final, which they've never done,
yeah,
they need to stick with a young guy and give him a proper 2-3 year run at it. Let him do what Rusty did. Let him grow, make his mistakes, come of age, and in 2 years' time or 6 years' time, let him help them win a World Cup. I would stick with a young guy.
I think that's superb advice, because it's incongruous that Ireland can win so many Six Nations, dominate world rankings, although I don't set much store by those, and then can't get out of a quarterfinal at a World Cup. Which brings us, Joel, to England versus France. Not many people thought that England would win, given even though that it was a Twickenham. But I don't think I've ever seen France make that many mistakes. And I'm very keen to hear your views on the Finn Smith at 10 versus Marcus Smith, because I thought he was superb. And he's also playing, of course, with his Northampton Saints halfback partner. So your thoughts on that, please, Joel.
Yeah, so the combination works. And so Marcus Smith for me at 10, just every now and then lacks something. I think sometimes he almost tries too hard to make it happen, you know. And with Finn Smith, I thought he's another young guy who was good on the weekend. He made good decisions. They controlled things well. Just coming back to your point on, and this is what it applies to England as well, your point on the Scottish back row. You know, back row is only as good as the tight five in front of them. And for correct. England's tight five were quite abrasive on the weekend, and they set a good platform, which makes it much easier for their loose forwards, for the halfbacks, for the midfield, and for any fullback who's quite attacking.
And their back row was unbelievable on Saturday. The England back row were brilliant. Man of the match was Tom Curry, no doubt.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it wasn't just at the breakdown. It was in the carry. It was, you know, decision-making. Yeah. It was a lot of things. And France may have made a lot of mistakes, but a lot of them were mistakes under pressure, because England countered the French game pretty well, you know. So yes, I thought Marcus Smith, he wants to run with the ball. He wants to carry. He wants to bring. He's a bit of a Willy LaRue, actually. He reminds me quite a lot of Willy LaRue. If you play him at fullback, great first receiver in attack, not a great controller of the game under pressure, you know, and maybe at fullback, that's where you can play. We don't see Apalele Fassi, he's maybe the one who's different at the moment. We don't see Jordan, what's his name? Will Jordan from New Zealand as well. But you don't see many fullbacks who are proper attacking threats at the moment, who join the line and cut through and everything. It's the wingers who are scoring tries, and it's the fullbacks who are creating space, you know. So maybe a ball player there like Willy LaRue, like Marcus Smith, is maybe a good for England. But what I will say is, to your points, France were out of sync and out of rhythm. They missed their normal 10. I thought they're intimate, and I thought that pivot role there, the combination just wasn't quite smooth, and as a result, they didn't quite get on the front foot. England countered well, and they were just dreadful ball in hand. They just made mistakes. They turned it over. Maybe even a slight bit of overconfidence, because they threw a lot of, not even 50-50 passes, a lot of 50-70 passes. They were risky in the way they did it. They weren't the France that we've become accustomed to watching.
And John, I thought that, you know, far be it from me to question Fabien Galtier, but I thought, you know, because France, as we know, play off their nine, but 10 is not the playmaker, the nine is, and yet they brought Lagarrick on, who's good, and moved Dupont to 10 and took Jalibert off, and I thought Jalibert was doing a decent job.
So I didn't think Jalibert was doing such a good job. I thought he was okay, but not great. And so, I mean, I could understand the thinking. But so the question I would always ask, and I mean, I've had one or two of the coaches phone me because I've criticized them. But sometimes we want to have all our best players on the field, doesn't matter where they play, as opposed to having the best player in each position at that time.
Right.
And I think that's the mistake Fabien Galtier made. I think he said, okay, I don't think you know, Jalibert is doing great. So let's move our best nine to be our tenth best fly off and bring on our second best come off. And I don't think it really worked.
I agree. I would agree with that. So we're taking a break, Joel, because Five Nations or Six Nations works like that now. They break up the five matches and give you a bit of a gap. Yeah. And so we're straight back into the URC this weekend. And for South Africans, there's a lot going on because we've got two derbies. If we watched that game, but yeah, give me your thoughts quickly, Joel, on the Stormers Bulls. You were down there, weren't you? In down this. No, you weren't. Okay.
Off racing mountain bike.
Oh, of course you were. You were riding up Taqua.
Yeah.
And like a dog.
I was supping like a dog, 100%. No, so look, to win in Cape Town is a big win for the Bulls, eh?
Sure.
And granted, the Stormers have had a lot of injuries and they're supping a little bit tonight. They're a little bit out of sync. But what, and it comes back to the same discussion around Scotland. The Bulls are so dominant up front at the moment. And when you dominate it by the top five, you dominate it in the scrum, it frees up your loose forwards, gives you go forward ball. It's just this complete upward spiral of going forward. And if you don't make mistakes, you make fewer mistakes, you win games. And the Bulls were just in terms of bullying the Stormers into submission.
And you know, Joel, maybe it was just because I was frustrated by the Stormers not winning because I'm a Stormers supporter, but I just thought they were rusty. The game was scrappy. It wasn't a great advert for what should. Yeah. I mean, it was a sellout. You know, we've got this wonderful derby, North versus South. It's historic. It's as close as you're going to get to Test match rugby, and yet the rugby didn't live up to it. And I was thinking, well, maybe this is why we're struggling in the Investec Champions Cup. You know. You just struggled. It didn't look good.
And you know, telltale sign, especially in Cape Town, where it's a young, vibrant crowd.
Yeah.
The stadium was quiet. The stadium, there was like, it wasn't like a stadium that was behind their team and roaring and behind the, you know, getting involved. It was quite quiet and subdued. And I think that was, be indicative of the nature of the game. I think it's hard for our teams. I think, you know, we struggled in the Champions Cup maybe for a number of reasons, but you know, to play in 30 degree heat in the peak of summer in this country.
Not easy, eh?
Not easy, you know, and maybe easier in Cape Town than it is in Durban. And I think back to the Sharks losing to Toulouse a few weeks ago in the humidity here at Durban. It's flipping tough, Rory. It's not easy.
Yeah.
And I'm not making excuses for the guys, but geez, it's hot and humid and It's just tough. It's tough for the overseas teams. You come from the cold to here, but even for us.
And so it should be. Yeah. No, you did right, Joel. So, okay. So this weekend we see two derbies, Lions versus Stormers and the Bulls hosting the Sharks. I cannot see the Bulls losing at Loftus. Again, keen to hear your views. But I've actually gone against my supporting instincts. And I'm actually calling the Lions by three, by not very many, to beat the Stormers at Emirates Ellis Park on Saturday. What are your views on those two derbies, Lions Stormers and Bulls Sharks?
Well, let's get the Lions out the way for.
Yeah,
I mentioned them last. So the Lions are this team where the sum of their parts is much greater than the whole. You know, they find a way. They play a great brand. You were talking about innovative coaching, Warren Gatland and. Ivan van Zyl with the Lions and his coaching team, they have got this team to play a brand of rugby that suits their limited resources. And yes, they've got some great players, but across the board, talent-wise, you know, they don't have the Springboks. They don't have the talent that you see in the Sharks team, the Bulls team, or the Stormers team, even with their injuries for that matter. But at home, in fact, anywhere they're tough to beat at home, they're very hard to beat. You know, Emirates Elan Park is like a fortress for them. The crowd are supporting them now. So I do think the Stormers are on a bad run, a bad roll.
Yeah.
Number of injuries. Not quite a lack of self-belief, but certainly a self-belief that is just, you know, questioning itself at the moment maybe. And I do think the Lions might sneak that one. I'm going to be at Loftus. And it's State of Origin weekend, you know. So, I mean, even this morning there was a photo of François Lerber in his school shirt and his pole gym shirt and one of the other players in their pole boys shirt. I will be wearing my Maritzburg College shirt at Loftus on Saturday.
Good stuff, Patrick.
But great pride and talking about that a little bit. But you know, you talk about fortresses, Loftus for the Bulls. It's a very hard place to go and win. And when you've got a number of injuries, and I see the Sharks have made a few selection surprises, actually, it's going to be brutally tough for the Sharks to get a little W in their column on the weekend. Not impossible, but tough. Very tough.
Would you mind sharing those changes, Joel? Because I haven't checked since we got on the call.
Okay.
The Sharks changes.
The Sharks team is Jordan Hendricks at fullback. Jorenzo Julius, Lucania, Amitan Hooker on the wing. Sia Masuku at 10, Grant Williams at 9, which I thought they'd have to play Grant Williams at 9 because they're going to get smashed up front. You want to strum off who's quick and he gets to the breakdown quickly and he clears quickly. Buthelezi, Chituka, and Mavasera. So their loose forwards are certainly not what we're accustomed to seeing. Jason Jenkins and Corner Roll, still not even Etzebeth. Trevor Nkana, Bongi Mbonambi, and Mtuku Mchunu. So it's a team that is
mixed batch.
It's a mixed batch, still very much weakened by injury. No, even Etzebeth, who is the talisman in that team. You know, he's about 2 years ago, I think he was being criticized, and maybe in France, especially 3 years ago, for not playing and giving his full heart in his club shirt. But for the Sharks, he has been sensational every game he's played. The fact that he's not playing, I think, is a big void in that side. As good as Jason Jenkins is, as young and dynamic as Corner Roll is, you know, no even Etzebeth is a massive blow. No Sia Kolisi. It's a team that will have to, you know, rely on a little bit of luck against a Bulls team that is, doesn't matter who they pick. Yeah. They too have had their injuries. They will be.
And no Jan Serfontein and no Lucanio Am, but that Jury's kid is looking really, really proper.
No, Lucanio Am is playing 12, so he is. Oh,
is
there.
He? Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, but it's. And Julius, Jorenzo Julius has been sensational. Youngster Ethan Hooker, strong, powerful on the wing. No, Apalele Fassi either. It's going to be tough. It's going to be tough.
So I think we're aligned on that one, Joel, that the Bulls will be too strong because I also think they're sick and tired of losing at Loftus, as I said last week. So we're calling a Bulls win there, right?
We're calling a Bulls win. And also, they come with confidence. You know, they've.
Yeah,
they won away last week. They've been dominant at Loftus. They're on a roll. They're on a good roll.
And how are you going to call Lion Stormers? Are you going to agree with me or disagree on my 3-point win for the Lions?
I think the Lions will win, but maybe by a little bit more than that. I haven't seen the teams. It's also hard to say.
Yeah, exactly.
Without having seen the teams, but I would think the way the Stormers played last week with the talent that's available to them. I would think the Lions might win by more.
Perfect. So we're going to play a little game here, Joel, for the rest of them. And I'm going to read out the five other fixtures. And I want you just the first thing that comes into your head using your wonderful gut feel for rugby built up over all these years. Edinburgh Zebre. And I'm mentioning the home team first.
Yeah, Edinburgh by 25.
Beautiful. Agreed. Zebre are absolutely nowhere, a bit like Wales. Ospreys. Leinster.
Oh, so Leinster to win. I would think probably not as far as people might expect because I think Ireland will not allow the internationals back. So I think it'll be Leinster by maybe 15 or so, somewhere around there. Not a huge score.
Good call. Benetton, Ulster.
Oh, tough one. It depends on whether the Italians players are allowed to play.
Exactly.
Benetton.
Because Benetton is Italy, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And I would think maybe some of them will be rested. If there's going to be an upset on the weekend, it might be this one. I would think Ulster, you don't have a lot of internationals. Ulster might put them there if the Italian players aren't playing. If the Italian players are playing, Benetton should win by about 10.
Right. Okay, I go with that. Connacht, Cardiff.
Connacht by 12 to 15. I am ground there. It's so important.
Yeah, and you know, one of the Glasgow Warriors assistant coaches is Irish, and he says Galway is the most horrendous place to go to and try and win away. It's always cold. It's always raining. The wind is always howling, and they've got a partisan crowd there. So, and Cardiff, I think, are the best of the four Welsh franchises, but I think that Cardiff, they've had a poor run. They owe it to their fans. So I agree with you, Joel.
Yeah, and,
the last one,
not play either, so that also might.
Yes, exactly. The last one is the one that I have the most skin in the game. So Glasgow Warriors are away to the Dragons,
and you missed Munster Scarlets, eh? So
I do.
Munster have also, you know, they've battling to turn their season around, and I think with a new coach, it's funny how I heard a player say it once, and I was flabbergasted, but I think it's true. You know, you always try harder when you have a new coach. And even if it's just the subconscious, I think Munster will win that one. And then the Dragons, Glasgow, are the Scottish players playing, or are they also rested?
You see, again, it's an interesting question. I don't know, because half of Scotland, more than half, is Glasgow.
Yeah.
So I don't know where they're going to play them.
I'd go because I think the Dragons are not great. I think Glasgow probably by, you know, seven maybe. In a tight.
That's exactly what I put down on
Western game.
Joel. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for that. So, Joel, as we end off, you know, we hinted at it in the beginning. Why don't you tell the BizNews tribe about, I don't even know how many Cape Epics, EPSA Cape Epics you've ridden now. And I think it was funny. I was looking at that Drikus du Plessis, Sean Strickland fight, and I saw that oak's nose, and what came into my mind was Stransky falling off the bike. Because your face didn't look much better. Man, they took us to... Yeah, no, exactly. Yeah. But it was full of blood. Yeah.
Yeah. No, so this is... I've done 13 epics already. I'm riding this year again with my dear friend Jeff Lee. It's our third one together. And we'll be riding as one of the EPSA teams, but Limerick EPSA, and hoping to just create some awareness for the charity and stimulate some fundraising in time to come. We fortunately we are quite cash, you know, flush. But I know in the next 8 to 10 months I'll need to get on the fundraising bandwagon. I want to set up another team down in the Western Cape and operate down there. And what we do is we go and we screen the kids from previously disadvantaged backgrounds. We screen their eyes. Those who show signs, it's quite a simple process to screen them. Those who show signs of needing some extra attention, we then do a full eye test, and we give prescription glasses to those who need glasses. Any kid who needs more you know, intense help, we refer them to ophthalmic surgeons, and we facilitate. We don't pay for it, but normally the surgeons give of their time, the hospitals give of their operating theaters, and we facilitate surgery for those who need surgery. And it's been amazing, Rory. It's been such an incredible journey. And the changes are not just... You know, for those kids who get glasses and you can see, and you now all of a sudden start doing better, and you can be educated and play sport because they can see the ball. It's the changes are all around it as well, because you see kids who were, you know, previously other kids thought they were dwarf at school and they bullied them. All of a sudden the bullying stops. The bullies were kids who couldn't see properly and bullied kids out of frustration, stopped bullying, you know. So it has this wonderful socio knock-on effect. And it's, you know, where we've been involved, we've seen the change, and we're very proud to have played a little role in uplifting some of these kids who've needed help. It's incredible what we do, to be quite honest. We have a wonderful charity, and ours is, you know, ours is also, we makes our hearts warm.
Well, I just want to say that on behalf of the BizNews community and the BizNews tribe, and there are people there with plenty of means, we just want to say thank you, because you know, it's a fine line that we walk, Joel, because you want to do something to make a difference, but you also don't want to trumpet it from the rooftops and make out as if it's all about you. And I know that's not you, because I know that. So for the BizNews tribe, Lumo Hawk, and Lumo is as in luminous, L-U-M-O, Hawk as in the bird of prey, Lumo Hawk, one word. Google it. That's Joel's charity. Strenners, you do wonderful work there. I will see you down in the Western Cape at the wine farms of Mirandal. See you on your bike. You and Jeff Lee is a top oak, and one of my mates as well. We wish you well, safe ride, and may the breeze always be at the back and the sunshine in your face, as the Irish prayer goes. What a privilege it's been to have you on our show, Joel. Thank you.
Rory, it's been great chatting, and I look forward to seeing you down there. I think you'll be drinking more wine than me, but I'll have one glass of Nigel.